This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: The Syrian foreign minister arrives in Saudi Arabia on the first such trip since the breakout of the foreign-backed militancy in Syria in 2011. Iran's foreign ministry says an Iranian delegation is in Saudi Arabia to prepare for the reopening of the embassy and consulate in the kingdom. And the Greek Orthodox Church slams Israel for enforcing what it calls unreasonable actions on its upcoming Easter celebrations in the occupied Al-Quds. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The Syrian foreign minister has arrived in Saudi Arabia amid the ongoing rapprochement efforts between the two Arab states. Faisal Miqdad made the trip at the invitation of his Saudi counterpart, Faisal bin Farhan. This is the first such trip by a Syrian foreign minister to Saudi Arabia since the breakout of the foreign-backed militancy in Syria in 2011. In the meantime, Syria says that it will reopen its diplomatic mission in Tunisia and appoint an ambassador there following a similar decision by Tunis. Also, nine Arab countries are set to hold a summit in Saudi Arabia later this week to discuss Syria's return to the Arab League. Let's get an update on the story from Mohammed Ali, our correspondent, who joins us from Damascus. Well, obviously, this is a very significant trip that has been made. Tell us more about the ongoings and what we may expect out of this, and, of course, any information you have on this.
Yes, according to Syrian state media, Syria's foreign minister Faisal al-Maqdad arrived in the Saudi city of Jeddah, accompanied by assistant Syrian foreign minister Ayman Susan. The Syrian official delegation was welcomed by Saudi Arabia's foreign minister and a number of other Saudi officials. According to Syrian state media, and I quote, the foreign minister will be discussing with the Saudi side bilateral relations with the brotherly country and topics of mutual interest. Now, this is according to Syrian state media. On the other hand, the Saudi state media, the Saudi press agency, confirmed the news. Of course, it's clarified that the visit of Syria's foreign minister comes following an invitation by his Saudi counterpart, Faisal bin Farhan. Also, according to Saudi media, the officials from both countries will be discussing the efforts exerted for reaching a political solution for Syria's crisis in a way that preserves Syria's unity, stability, and security. Topics will also cover the facilitations for the return of Syrian refugees back to Syria, as well as efforts made for sending more humanitarian aid to the Syrians affected in areas that was hit by the recent earthquakes. Now, definitely this is the most significant development in the relations between both countries since Saudi Arabia severed ties, closed its embassies almost a decade ago. It's very important to point out that such a step, such a visit that we're seeing right now has been only possible due to several factors. One of them is the agreement that was reached between perhaps Iran and Saudi Arabia on restoring diplomatic ties. And we all remember what Iran said at that time and even previously, that dialogue among countries of the region is the only solution for solving the problems of this region without any kind of foreign intervention. So definitely this is a significant development happening in the region.
If you have information, Mohammed Ali, about this meeting that's going to be held in Saudi Arabia that we have in our news regarding how there's going to be nine Arab countries that will be meeting later this week to discuss Syria's return to the Arab League. Do you have any information on that? Because that appears to be, obviously, it would set the tone for many Arab countries to have Syria come back into the fold.
lots of efforts exerted by several sides in the region for Syria's return to the Arab League, perhaps. However, we also have to point out to what Syrian president said before, that the matter is not about Syria's return to the Arab League. What is more important than that is restoring normal relations, bilateral relations among countries of this region. This is much more important than Syria's return to the Arab League or attending the Arab League summit. We don't have information on that upcoming meeting, but it's clear, looking at the developments, that most of the countries of the region do want to restore relations back with Syria. It seems that they have realized that cutting ties, adopting the hostile stances will never solve any kind of problems in the region, and dialogue is the only solution. Those countries have now realized that fact, and this is what we're seeing now, efforts exerted to restore relations with Syria. It's highly possible to see Syria attending the upcoming Arab League summit in May. We have to wait and see at the end of the day what will happen in those talks. I think there are only a couple of countries that are still opposing Syria's return to the Arab League, and the efforts being exerted in the region, whether by Iran, now Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, will perhaps be fruitful, will be positive efforts in bringing back Syria to the Arab League and bringing good relations between Syria and all Arab countries.
Thank you very much for that. Mohammed Ali there from Damascus. Thank you, Mohammed. Well, Iran has sent a delegation to Saudi Arabia to prepare for the reopening of the country's diplomatic missions in the kingdom. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the delegation has already been received in Riyadh. Nasser Kanani said the group will make necessary arrangements for opening Iran's embassy in the Saudi capital, as well as a consulate in the port city of Jeddah. The activities of Iran's representative office in the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation will also be discussed. Iran and Saudi Arabia announced the restoration of their diplomatic ties under a China-brokered reconciliation deal in March. The two West Asian countries severed ties in 2016 following some untoward incidents. Iran has halted visits by non-Muslims, including Jews, to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound until the end of the month of Ramadan. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made the announcement after a wave of unrest and condemnations over the regime's brutal attacks on Muslim worshippers at Islam's third holiest site. According to Palestine Information Center, Israeli forces have also been ordered to stop settlers from visiting the Al-Aqsa compound from Wednesday. Israel's far-right minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, has described Netanyahu's decision as a blatant mistake. Ben-Gvir has been on the forefront of supporting terrorism and incitement against Palestinians. The resistance movement Hamas has called on Palestinians to mobilize and to gather at Al-Aqsa during the last 10 days of Ramadan. According to a 1967 agreement, non-Muslims are allowed onto the site during visiting hours, but they are barred from any religious rituals there.
Reacting to a threat-riddled speech by the Israeli Prime Minister, Hamas resistance movement said Benjamin Netanyahu's remarks will not weaken Palestinians' resolve to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque against the occupying regime's aggression.
Netanyahu's speech cannot frighten our Palestinian people. Palestinians will continue the battle to defend the identity of Al-Aqsa Mosque in the face of the religious war waged by the enemy.
Qassem's remarks came as the Tel Aviv regime has been dangerously stoking tensions throughout the occupied territories and beyond when it carried out a savage attack on Palestinian worshippers who were observing the holy fasting month of Ramadan at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, which is Islam's third holiest site. The first bout of the raid saw the regime's forces storming the compound, beating the Palestinian worshippers there before arresting and forcing out hundreds of them. Dozens of Palestinians were wounded as a result of the violence. The raids prompted several rounds of retaliatory rocket strikes against the occupied territories from the direction of the Gaza Strip, where Hamas is headquartered, as well as from Lebanon and Syria. During his Monday speech, Netanyahu admitted that the regime has responded to retaliatory strikes by dropping 50 tons of bombs on ground targets belonging to Hamas in the Gaza Strip. He also accused Hamas of being behind the reprisal attacks that targeted the occupied territories from Lebanon, saying, "We will not allow Hamas to establish itself in Lebanon by acting on all fronts." The Israeli premier also claimed that the regime had thwarted hundreds of operations in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of the year, alleging that the regime could reach the resistance everywhere. Responding to Netanyahu's claims, Qassem described his speech as an attempt to falsify the facts, saying that the Israeli occupation was the basis of all tensions across the occupied territories. The Hamas official said the occupiers are the ones who practice terrorism systematically and continuously, pointing out that the Palestinian people are waging a legitimate battle to restore their right to freedom and independence. He added that Netanyahu's threats against our Palestinian people, Syria, Lebanon, and Iran prove that the occupying regime is a menace to the entire region and its interests.
Tensions are running high across the occupied territories. Israeli forces and settlers have been carrying out raids at Al-Aqsa Mosque and occupied Al-Quds, while Palestinians have been retaliating with rocket attacks from Gaza, as well as shooting and car ramming operations. Latest polls show support for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his far-right coalition cabinet to have plummeted in recent weeks.
The Israeli army was taken aback by the allegations of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said on April 10th that attacks on Lebanon last week targeted Hezbollah positions. The Israeli premier said during a news conference on Monday that in the attacks on Lebanon, in addition to the positions of Hamas, we also targeted the positions of Hezbollah in Lebanon. According to Yossi Yehoshua, the military affairs commentator for an Israeli daily, the army was very surprised to hear Netanyahu say that Hezbollah's infrastructure was attacked in Lebanon, as Tel Aviv took great care to only hit alleged Hamas targets. Netanyahu's sham allegation came during a press conference in which he also backpedaled on his decision to sack his minister Yoav Gallant. The embattled premier said, "I've decided to put our differences behind us." Earlier in his speech, Netanyahu took aim at the opposition led by former Prime Minister Yair Lapid, blaming him for the multiple crises gripping Israel. Netanyahu accused Lapid and his officials of showing weakness. In particular, the premier pointed to the maritime demarcation deal signed with the Lebanese government last year under U.S. mediation, claiming that the agreement had instead been signed with Hezbollah without getting anything in return. Netanyahu also blasted Israeli citizens and army reservists who took to the streets to protest against his judicial overhaul plan, saying, "When you declare that Israel is collapsing, how do you think our enemies interpret this?" Monday's speech came just hours after Israeli media released poll results showing that support for Netanyahu's Likud party had nosedived. According to the survey, more than two-thirds of voters disapproved of Netanyahu's performance in office. If elections were held today, Likud would lose more than a third of its seats in the Knesset.
The Greek Orthodox Church decries Israel for enforcing what it calls unreasonable restrictions on its upcoming Easter celebrations in the occupied Al-Quds. Comes as talks between church leaders and the Israeli regime on attendance numbers at the Holy Fire ceremony on Saturday have failed. Response: Father Mateos Siopis from the Greek Orthodox Church urged Christians to attend in defiance of the Israeli heavy-handed curbs. He also vowed that churches will freely worship and do so in peace. Last year, Israeli forces imposed barriers throughout the Christian quarter of Al-Quds, sparking clashes with worshippers. The Palestinian Committee for Al-Quds has launched a social media campaign commemorating Al-Quds Day in the besieged Gaza Strip. Ola Al-Assi reports from Gaza.
Hundreds of Palestinian social media activists took part in a ceremony organized by the Palestinian Committee for Al-Quds to commemorate the Al-Quds Day in Gaza. The activists mainly used the hashtag "The West Bank is Al-Quds Shield" on Twitter, which is the banner of this year's event.
This reflects the growing resistance in towns of West Bank, which constitute a shield for Quds amid the Israeli occupation's threats of erasing its civilizations and human and religious heritage. This also reflects the unity of the Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza, diaspora, and Al-Quds.
In this campaign, the Palestinians follow what they call media confrontation, through which they share posts and tweets about the Israeli regime's violations against the Palestinian people in the occupied Palestinian territories, especially amidst the recent escalations in Al-Quds.
The Palestinian content, especially in the past few years, is suppressed on social media platforms, and the Palestinian narrative is restricted. We as social media specialists and activists are trying to understand the platform's bias algorithms to help publish Palestinian content and expose Israeli crimes.
The national and Islamic factions, as well as the resistance forces, stressed on the unity of Palestine, as well as the axis of resistance, saying that the axis is more coherent and integrated today than before, and it's confronting the Tel Aviv's regime with all its might. This annual event comes in Ramadan every year and continues for the sixth consecutive year in Gaza, where Palestinians, along with the Arab world, reiterate their support for the Palestinian people in their struggle against Israeli occupation and for Al-Quds.
Palestinian activists are using every means available in order to refute the Israeli occupation's propaganda campaign, especially amid the current wave of intensified Israeli aggression, Al Al-Asi, Gaza.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of Worlds. Just stay with us. It's bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Glorious martyrdom. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on one of the most tragic days in the history of mankind. Today, Ramadan is the anniversary of Imam Ali, peace upon him, the person who is, and whom God Almighty had made second in merits to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. A millennium and four centuries have passed since his departure from the mortal world, and yet Imam Ali, peace upon him, remains immortal for all believers who continue to pay homage to him, whatever the circumstances, including the current corona pandemic plaguing the world. He was the embodiment of justice, and this was among the causes of enmity towards him by certain people who finally conspired to murder the person and end the only instances of the administration of social justice in history. Please stay with us for a special feature in this regard. It is indeed an irony of Islamic history that on the 21st of Ramadan, the second of the three probable grand knights, the grand man, Imam Ali, peace upon him, achieved martyrdom, having been struck a fatal sword blow on his head while performing the morning ritual prayer in the Grand Mosque of Kufa by a Khawarij or renegade from Islam, progenitors of modern-day Takfiri terrorists. It could be called the martyrdom of the spirit of the Holy Quran, in view of the famous statement of the Prophet, who decades earlier had foretold his dear divinely designated heir of the tragedy he would suffer in Ramadan. As recorded by all prominent narrators, including Sunni, indeed Ali is with Quran, and the Quran is with Ali. The two will never separate, even when they return to me at the pool of Kauthar. In view of these undeniable facts, all of us ought to pray for the triumph of righteousness over the end of tyranny on planet Earth. The great Satan, the US, or its agents who are bombarding the people of Yemen, is committing untold against the people of the eastern part, rising Iraq and Syria, pounding the Palestinians, funding sedition in Pakistan. Anyone who attempts to write Imam Ali, peace upon him, will admit that man of God, obedient to the creative aspects of life, to the extent that entertain the idea of committing the mind of disobedience. His faith in our ears, this thing of a millennium and four centuries, by Allah, even means of the seven climes with all that under the skies, in order that Allah, to the extent of one grain of barley from an ant, I would not. The world is lighter than the mouth of a locust. Imam Ali is indeed a paradigm of piety and in the worship of God. Himself had said, "O people, I do not imitate unless I do not make you refrain from disobedience unless I do." He lived according to the commandments of God and in accordance with or practice and behavior because of his commitment to these factors. Caliphate after the death of the second, when the condition of the Man Council was that the next caliph should to the behavior and to caliphs. Justice is regarded as a much cherished humanitarian principle. Very few who really adhere to justice. History bears witness that those in power show respect for justice as long as it is in their interest. In the lexicon of such persons, limits. As for Imam Ali, peace upon him, he had a transcend self-interest ceased to exist. Victim of the just ruler and spared no effort justice. When he heard that the agents of the rebel Muawiyah had plundered and snatched the jewelry from the witch living under the protection of Islam, if any Muslim dies of grief after this, he's not to be blamed but rather for him before. Imam says, "By Allah, pass the night in wakefulness on the thorns of the or to be as a priest Allah and his prophets on the day of judgment, as an heir over any person or a usurper of anything out of the worldly way. I oppress anyone for the sake of a life fast moving towards destruction and is to remain on the time." This lofty sense of justice for restoring people their denied rights, if it endeared him, as it made the oppressors his open enemies. The commander of the Fmin to restore to the public treasury the wealth of the Muslim that the previous caliph hoarders were now the wealthiest people. Imam Ali says in this regard, "By Allah, even if I had found that by such money married or slave mates purchased, I would have resumed it because in dispensation of justice who finds it hard to act harder to deal with injustice. This is how Imam Ali, peace upon him, built his state policy that prospered under the previous administration due to rampant favoritism and other forms of corruption, felt alarmed and became obstacles to the implementation of justice in the Islamic society, to covet worldly positions and possessions. It would not be many people desire fame and publicity more than anything else, resort to any method to achieve this. The life of the mortal world is the ultimate. Imam Ali, peace upon him, however, considered the world like of a swine in the hands of a leopard. Addressing the world, he says, "O world, O world, away from me. Why do you present yourself to me? Or are you eager for me? You may not guess me. Deceive some other person concerned with you." Despite being the ruler of a vast realm extending from Central Asia to North Africa, Imam Ali, peace upon him, never forsook the company of the poor and the destitute, and would even join them for meals at times. When he appointed governors and other officials for the far-flung provinces, he first and foremost instruction was to cater to the needs of the masses of common people and to respect their rights. He used to remind his officials, saying, "Certainly your assignment is not a morsel for you, but it is a trust around your neck." He served as the model of emulation for his friends and urged them to acquire the qualities he possessed. The commander of the faithful strove to build persons who will determine their own destiny and will not be influenced by anyone, even if it means that they will be boycotted by those trapped in the material life of the world. Elsewhere, while describing the qualities of the faithful, he says, "Their countenance is the countenance of the truthful, and their speech is the speech of the virtuous. They are wakeful during nights in devotion to Allah, and are minarets of guidance during the day. They hold fast to the rope of the Quran and revive the traditions of Allah and His Prophet. They do not boast nor indulge in self-conceit, nor misappropriate, nor create mischief. Their hearts are in paradise, while their bodies on earth are busy in good acts." So strong was the sense of justice to Imam Ali, peace upon him, that even on his deathbed, he instructed his son and successor, Imam Hassan, peace upon him, to arrange food for his imprisoned assassin, Ibn Muljam. And when the wretch was brought before him, he ordered the loosening of his bonds and offered him the milk he was drinking. Alas, such a noble soul was not allowed to live and left the world a martyr on the 21st of the blessed month of fasting, the anniversary of the death of Prophet Moses and the day on which God Almighty raised Prophet Jesus to the heavens to save him from the plots of the Israelites and their Roman overlords. He was laid to rest in the dead of night in Najaf near Kufa, besides the graves of the prophets Adam and Noah, peace upon them. Imam Hassan, peace upon him, said on the funerary in praise of his father, "Tonight has passed away a person who was the first among the early believers in good actions. Nor did any later Muslims will attain his level in good actions. He waged jihad alongside the Prophet of God to protect him with his own life. The Prophet of God used to send him forward with his standard, while Gabriel supported him on his right and Michael supported him on his left. He would not return until God brought victory through his hands. He, peace upon him, has departed on this, the night on which Jesus, son of Mary, was raised by God to the heavens, and on which Joshua, son of Nun, the testamentary trustee Moses, peace upon him, died. He left no gold or silver except 700 dirhams with which he had intended to provide his household a servant.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another special edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition during the holy month of Ramadan, we will be having a look at different parts of the supplication Abu Hamza Sumali. We will be bringing you different commentaries on some parts of this dua. We'll be back after you listen to these parts.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aasha qalbi. وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني فيا مولاي ويا مؤملي ويا منتهى سؤلي فرق بيني وبين الذنب المانع لي من لزوم طاعتك ما أسألك لقديم الرجاء فيك وعظيم الطمع منك الذي أوجبته على نفسك من الرأفة والرحمة.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were talking about this part of the supplication of Abu Hamza. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aasha qalbi, wa bimunajatika barradtu alam al-khawfi anni. My Master, in your remembrance my heart takes delight, and with prayers I hold communion with you, it benumbs the pain of fear that torments me. Regarding this part of the supplication, dear brothers and sisters, we have talked about the reality of remembrance. As you may have been previously with us, we have mentioned that peace of mind lies only in the remembrance of the Almighty Allah, because it is what the Holy Quran says, "Lillah tatma'innul qulub." The hearts in Allah's remembrance. So when we say, Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aisha qalbi, this is exactly the exemplified version of that verse of the Holy Quran. This is what we mean when we say that most of the interpretations of the verses of the Holy Quran are reflected through the supplications of the infallibles. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aisha qalbi. In your remembrance, my heart takes delight. وَبِمُنَاجَاتِكَ بَرَّتُ أَلَمَ الْخَوْفِ عَنِّي. And with your prayers, I can benumb the pains of fear that torment me. In the previous episodes, Julius, that one important feature of the heart is that it can correctly grasp the truth. We mentioned the different reasons and instances. But the other feature of the human heart is that it can become the temporary abode of anything or anyone. And it can turn into a fair which is unknown to man. If he only reflects for a few minutes and take note of whatever enters his heart, he will see that the tumult taking place in his heart is real. It exists, sometimes in a short devotional act, for example, a two-cycle prayer, a two-raka'a prayer. The mind is preoccupied with many things. Man is astonished as soon as, how could I ever think about this and that? My life, my car, my house, my children, my wife, anything, any challenges, any difficulties. This is not only in wakefulness, as it is also present in sleep. And in sleep, it is reflected as a dream.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it, and whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
So this is the second feature of the heart. It will be the temporary abode of anything, of any thought. And man is surprised to see all these things come and go out of the heart. But the value of the heart lies and depends on that which enters it. As such, it sometimes falls and becomes as valueless as garbage, and at other times, it so ascends that becomes the throne of the All-Beneficent, the throne of Rahman. قَلْبُ الْمُؤْمِنِ عَرْشُ الرَّحْمَنِ, one of the traditions says. The believer's heart is the throne of the All-Beneficent. Is the heart of a person who always thinks of wealth, livestock, and farm something other than garbage? Is the heart of the person who always thinks of this estate, that property, so-and-so house, trade, fraud, etc., something other than a real estate agency? If we describe the heart of a person who is preoccupied with his car and with his house and other people's stuff, are we exaggerating? Of course, we do not intend to say that the heart of man must not think about these. Of course, these blessings are meant for the human beings, for the true mu'min to make the most of. He has to use them. It is the Almighty Allah who has created the heart to be thinking about this stuff as well. But the point is, are these things eternal? The true heart must think about everything that makes him eternal. So one time, he can think about his property, his livestock, his wealth, as something that can make him eternal, and this is even the remembrance of Almighty Allah. Thinking about this stuff that are for the Almighty Allah's pleasure, and on the other hand, sometimes you think about this stuff that are not related to your eternal life. And this is what we call as something which is garbage. So the heart can become the throne of the All-Beneficent. قَلْبُ الْمُؤْمِنِي عَرْشُ الرَّحْمَنِ. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
New developments in occupied Palestine. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, in 1979 issued a message to Muslims across the world calling the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as the Royal Quds Day to support the Palestinian people and their sacred cause. He had asked the world Muslims and their governments to get united to cut the hands of the usurper Israeli regime. The Imam considered this day not just the Day of Palestine, but the Day of Islam. World Quds Day is Imam Khomeini's precious initiative to unite the Islamic world. Today, this issue has turned into a humane issue as free-spirited people all over the globe shout for the liberation of Palestine. Before the declaration of the Royal Quds Day by Imam Khomeini, symbolic days had been recorded at the UN, such as the Earth Day or the Day of Solidarity with Palestinians. But they were just ceremonial. The Earth Day had aimed at solidarity of Palestinians and persuading them to resist against the gradual occupation of their land by the usurper Zionists. The United Nations on November 29, 1948, called the day as the Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people to cover up its historical role in the occupation of this land through the ratification of Resolution 181 of the General Assembly. But the World Oats Day is different in several ways. Firstly, Palestine and the Holy Beit al-Muqaddas have turned into the focal point of unity of Muslims all over the world. Secondly, if the former days mainly had concentrated on the responsibility of the Palestinians inside the West Bank or the governments and international organizations, the World Oats Day calls Muslims across the world to feel responsible for the fate of this sacred land. This originates in the fact that Muslims cannot be put under direct pressure of the Western regimes and the Zionist mafia, and can rather pressure the criminal Zionist entity by demonstrations and sanctions on purchase of Israeli goods or the companies whose profit goes to the pockets of Zionists. Thirdly, the World Oats Day is held in the blessed month of Ramadan, so it has already gained a religious hue. Beit al-Muqaddas has been the most important city of Palestine and the first qibla, or the focal point of prayers for Muslims. This day has turned into an ideological discourse, which practically accumulates the support of Muslims and promises the ultimate liberation of the whole Palestine in the near future. In view of this, every year the new developments in the occupied territories add to the significance of the World Oats Day. One of the latest developments in Palestine is the emergence of the new resistance group called Arinol Osud, or the Forest of Lions in the West Bank, which has sent dumbfounded the Zionists and has sent shivers to the spine of the criminals. The combatants of this group announced their birth on December 9, 2021. Thus, the Zionist spying apparatus has designed many terror operations against the members of this group, but most of them have failed. Another resistance group is called Jenin. This group started activity in May 2021 in Gaza under the command of Jamil al-Amouri from the Quds Combat Groups. This group has put on its agenda direct fight with the occupying Israelis. The new groups are emerging one after the other to force the usurper Zionist regime to transfer its armored units to the West Bank. The new generation of resistance was witness how the conservative Zionist cabinets broached all their international commitments and even those clarified within the Oslo Agreement. They include development of Jewish settlement, Judaization of territories, demolition of houses, theft of water resources, expulsion of Palestinians, and murdering of old people, children, and women. The new generation has also realized that the Zionist child-killing regime is quite opposed to the foundation of a Palestinian independent country. This generation has tried to stand against criminal extremists in the Zionist cabinet, like Ben Gafer and Smotrich, who are not content except with the extermination or expulsion of all Palestinians. These developments make it quite natural to the youth in Palestine to think of armored struggle against the savage Zionists. They are opposed to differences among various groups and call for everyone to target the weapons towards the enemy. Thank you. The new Palestinian generation has understood that the unholy call for normalization of ties with the Zionist regime by a handful of Arab governments should be strongly opposed. The Arab and Islamic nations should rely on their natural capacities to fight the Israeli regime. On the other side, although it appears that the most warmongering and bloodthirsty cabinet has been established in the history of Israel, the serious differences and rifts inside the Zionist entity and the Netanyahu cabinet prophesy the ultimate explosion of the regime from within. On the one hand, the coalition cabinet implements internal agreements one after the other just to survive, but this has just caused a further flare-up among different groups. On the other hand, Netanyahu and his super-extremist cabinet faces the unprecedented reverse migration of Zionists from the occupied Palestine.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.